Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and where are the places that you would like to spend the middle of the winter, or I should say early winter? Would you want to be in Miami or San Francisco, perhaps, or going out towards Italy or the Caribbean, maybe Mexico? How about, Iraq? I think that'd be a kind of an interesting place to spend a couple of weeks around Christmas time and thereafter. Well, that would strike most of us as nuts. However, there's one person who did that very nutty thing, and he's not a soldier, and he's not technically a news broadcaster or there for any reason, reasons corporate or otherwise. He's just someone who has traveled a lot and figured if there was a place to be that would be interesting in the world, it would be Baghdad, you know, just fairly shortly after the war. And that's what Mike Shiley did at the very end of 2003. He went inside Iraq and came out with a documentary called Inside Iraq. We asked him about it. Mike, I think we have him on the phone.
Yeah, hi Dave, how are you today?
Mike, how you doing? Good, good. Well, welcome back to America. You've been here like 3 years already, but welcome back anyway.
Well, thank you.
Why, dude? Why?
Well, that's the question everybody asks. Definitely the question everybody asks. Well, I lived in the Middle East for a year. I've traveled all over the world. I've been to 38 countries. And number one, I've always wanted to be a war correspondent. And number two, as an adventure traveler, Iraq is at the very top of my list. So I decided to approach my local ABC affiliate station in Portland, Oregon, and ask them if I could volunteer to be a freelance reporter for them, even though I had no experience. And after I signed a liability release waiver so that if I got killed or kidnapped, they wouldn't be responsible.
Yeah.
I then rented a bulletproof vest, which you can do in Miami, cashed in airline miles, made a press pass at Kinko's, and flew to Iraq for 2 months, where I got into the country, I got into the ABC News Bureau in Baghdad, and I even got embedded with the U.S. military.
And all of this just for your own curiosity? I mean, you did have sort of the backing of ABC News, but...
I did. I had permission from my local affiliate to volunteer as a freelancer for them. So I had a tepid permission to go in. But basically, I was a private citizen.
Yeah, people actually should know if they go to your website.
It's InsideIraqTheMovie.com.
InsideIraqTheMovie.com. But there's also a place where people can read your blog, your diary, while you were in Iraq and writing for KATU, that affiliate in Portland. So it's basic missives of from your very first day there to going through what you went through, which, thank goodness, wasn't anything so terrible from at least what I read or so far what I've seen in the movie. I mean, I don't think you really encountered anything. I mean, obviously your life was in danger every day, but did you ever have any really hair-raising experiences?
Well, on the very first day that we crossed the border, my driver told me that he wanted to go get more cigarettes. And about an hour outside of Fallujah, he decided to pull off the road and leave the convoy behind. And I thought that I was being kidnapped.
And I
thought that here I am 4 hours into the country, and I'm already being kidnapped.
And he really just wanted cigarettes? I mean, I saw the guy.
He really just wanted cigarettes. And I couldn't believe how stupid that was that he would stop an hour outside of Fallujah just to buy cigarettes.
There was another scene in the film that also appeared kind of dangerous, although nothing happened. You were talking about the markets that they have there and the businesses that have opened up in Iraq and Baghdad since the downfall of Saddam and since the Americans have been there. And it is obviously regular businesses are suffering because there's, again, this is going back to 2003, but electricity was only on for like 25% of the day and people had trouble with gas and water. But the black market was coming up in the world. Why don't you tell a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, the funny thing about it, Dave, is when you give a country that doesn't have freedom, you give them freedom. We think the first things that come through the door is the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, maybe a 7-Eleven or two, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened with the Iraqis that I observed was they got pornography, prostitution, drugs, illegal weapons markets. You can buy a rocket-propelled grenade at an openly in a market for $25.
Oh, come on. A working rocket launcher?
A working rocket launcher. A rocket-propelled grenade for $25, and the launcher is $50.
Did you buy one?
No, but for $75, you can completely outfit yourself, and it pierces armor.
Did you see anybody buying them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, everybody was buying them. They were buying all kinds of munitions on the side of the road on these little gun markets.
But can we assume that? Yeah, sorry.
And I captured it all on my film, including the porno markets and porno theaters, and it's kind of amazing what's going on in Iraq. And the thing about it, Dave, is that most reporters that go there, and rightly so, never go outside the green zone. And the green zone is really just the Baghdad Convention Center, the Al-Rashid and the Sheraton Hotel area. It's maybe a 2 or 3 acre complex. And they never go outside and wander the streets. And I decided to go out and wander the streets, and the things I found were amazing.
Well, yeah, that's also going to be a shock for, I guess, most Americans who only see what's on TV or only know about the Arab world from that standpoint. I mean, we think in terms of, okay, we're over there bombing these people into nothing, but they were living in huts anyway, and they spend all day on prayer mats, you know, praising Allah and vowing for the destruction of Israel, which a certain contingent of them do. But there's also, I mean, Baghdad is a city. You know, there's people with printing shops, and there's people with, you know, a bookstore, and it really, people wearing suits and ties and speaking English. I mean, it was not like third world sort of African hut civilization over there. Mostly, I guess, thanks to Saddam. Americans don't necessarily register that when they think of what's going on over there, because all they see is, like, armies going up, in convoys on burned-out roads.
Correct. That's right. Baghdad does have a history of good education. They have engineers and accountants and construction people, and they, you know, they're a secular society, and they have built, you know, roads and highways and museums and bridges and everything, and they do have a certain degree of sophistication there. And I would say that I understand where you're coming from with the bowing for the destruction of Israel, but you know, I lived in Egypt for a year. I've been to Syria, Jordan. I've been to Israel 7 times. And I personally never once heard any Arab person that I have been encountered with say that they wished for the destruction of Israel. And I'm Jewish.
Oh my gosh.
Well, my mom is Jewish.
Okay. Well, that makes you Jewish, dude. Are you Jewish between the legs?
No.
Really? So that's, you're halfway there.
I'm halfway there.
Wow, and you're Jewish and went to all these Arab countries. It's kind of nice to hear that, you know, they're not all sitting there smoking hookah pipes and thinking of how they can drive our people into the Red Sea. Do they say that in America?
They are smoking hookah pipes, but they may not necessarily be thinking about that. They may be more thinking about how they're going to feed their families and who's going to win backgammon tonight.
Huh. Well, since you were there at the end of 2003, from what you've heard in response to your film and in response to your journals and to whomever you may have made friends with and kept in touch with over there, have things gotten better, worse, better in some ways, worse in others?
Things have gotten much worse in Iraq as far as the security is concerned.
Okay.
When I was there were only 14 insurgent attacks a day. The USA Today reported about 2 weeks ago that in 2005, it jumped to over 100 insurgent attacks a day.
Well, then there's $25 grenade launchers. What the hell do they expect?
That's true. And that counts. You know, if they fire one of those off, that's an insurgent attack. And they have an average of 100 of them a day now. There's no way that I could have made this film today.
Right.
Iraq is just simply too dangerous now.
I haven't seen the whole film, but I'm wondering, though, it seems to me that what you were taken to was more of the secular Iraq, the Iraq that would be looking at pornography, buying cigarettes, trying to run businesses, were you able to infiltrate, I don't know if infiltrate is the word, but really get towards the deeply religious Islamist, if not radical, but certainly that group that voted, the type of people who voted for Hamas, in other words?
There's no doubt that group exists in Iraq. Obviously, it exists. I didn't have any personal experiences with them. You know, I'd like to say that in my experiences in Iraq, and for the most part in the Arab Middle East, that, you know, a lot of people are not a part of the radical Islamists. Just like not every Jew, is a Hasidic.
Right. Okay. I mean, I think we do get that over here. I mean, even with the whole cartoon thing.
Right.
You know, we realize that is a small group, but the group just seems too damn big even as it is. What were your thoughts of the American military over there, the job they're doing?
The individual soldiers as human beings are really pretty decent people, pretty good guys working hard to try to survive and try to get their job done. The military, though, as an institution and as a bureaucracy, is so fumbling and bumbling that it seems like they are their own worst enemies. And I point to the dump on base, where it's so organized, disorganized on the largest base in Iraq, that oftentimes goods that come in from America that the military has ordered, the unit that ordered them no longer needs that good, and they wind up throwing it in the dump. And there are goods that are still bounded to the pallets that they were shipped on, and they've gone from the factory directly into the dump.
That's
and
right,
there are others in Iraq on the same base that will reorder that very same item because they can't find it. It's in the dump. Meanwhile, there's gangs of Iraqi kids are starved to death and are willing to risk a bullet to sneak under the wire and scavenge at our dumps.
And I think you also show, like, a giant oil spill, speaking of oil, that's just leaching into the ground and poisoning pretty much everything around it for the next 10 years that nobody's cleaning, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, environmentally, you know, armies, especially the U.S. Army, has never exactly been recycle-minded. You know, they just pretty much dump whatever they want, wherever they want it, and when it's a huge army, you know, it creates a giant mess.
The only thing the military recycles is bodies. You know, some go down, they get more. They ship for more, that's it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I would say that whether a person likes the Iraqi people or hates the Iraqi people, I think that it's going to be good for all Americans to try to understand more about what's going on in the country. Whether they agree with it or not, or whether they like the Iraqi people or not, we just don't get a lot of information about what's happening in Iraq because the media really only covers car bombs and press conferences. They don't get deeper into it. And that's one of the great things about the film is that it gets deeper into the issues. And you don't have to like the Iraqi people or like Arabs to want to know and to have a look into their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty funny early in the film, someone, you know, you point a camera at someone and they say, oh, you know, all Iraqis nice people, we all get along. From here, right. Sure. Let the Palestinians move into Iraq. We'll see how much you love them. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they fight just as much as Israelis do, let me tell you.
That does bring up the question when you point the camera at someone and they say stuff like that. Do you feel that because you have the camera on, you pretty much, I assume all the time, that does shift the reality already, that on some level you were changing the true reality there just because people had cameras on them?
Yeah, that's always a good point. You know, how do people change when the camera turns on? I try to use a very small camera, and I shoot everything with just one person as the crew, me. I don't come through with, you know, a five-person crew and a giant camera and a bunch of producers. I go through the markets with one small camera and just me. So I try to catch a lot of real life as it is.
You did the sound as well? It was a mic on the camera? Picked up the same sound? It was really good.
Yeah, I put a high-quality shotgun mic on the camera, and I try to monitor the audio through the screen. You know, I mean, I'm a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, you know? But you know, I'm one person and I'm trying to make a difference. I'm trying to show Americans what it looks like over there, whether they like it or not. And I couldn't get anybody else to go with me, so I had to go by myself. And so I did the best I could, but I think that I captured a lot of real-life moments over there.
By the way, I should mention to folks, aside from the fact that we are talking with Mike Shiley, who is the video documentary maker of Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories, this was not, like, as you said, your first trip outside our borders. I mean, in 1989 you were working, and you were just, I guess, bored at work and saving your pennies, and you decided to travel. A lot of people do that. They go away for 2 or 3 weeks, and maybe somewhere even fairly exotic, like an African safari. But you went for like 18 months, right?
Yes, I did. I went for 18 months.
To where?
Well, my girlfriend told me that she had dumped me about 5 months into the trip, so I ripped up my return ticket and just decided to keep going.
And you went to?
Well, I went all over Europe, Scandinavia, Russia, Eastern Europe, all through the Middle East. I wound up living in Egypt. I lived actually in the Sinai Peninsula, and I lived in a little town called Dahab. And if any of your listeners have been to Israel or lived in Israel, they know that Eilat is the big diving area. But just south of Eilat is Sharm el-Sheikh and Dahab, and those are some of the finest diving sites in the world. And the Sinai Peninsula is relatively welcoming for Israelis to come down, and we certainly had many Israelis as customers.
But by the way, just in case that that was unclear, he's saying diving with a V, not like diving like eating areas. You're also a professional diver. So,
correct, yes. Yeah. I'm a professional scuba diver. I'm a dive master.
Ooh.
And for people who are divers, I'm also a master scuba diver, which are two different things.
Now, let me ask you, though, in those travels of the 18 months, were there any either really, really scary moments or really extraordinary fun anecdotes that happened?
Well, absolutely. I mean, but most of it was created by my own, you know, my own stupidity, I think.
Such as?
I was taking a train from Prague to Istanbul, came into Belgrade, Yugoslavia at night, realized that Belgrade, this is 93, realized that Yugoslavia was a country at war, and I would have no way of getting out because of the UN economic sanctions around the country. And a Wall Street Journal reporter allowed me to sleep on the couch in her hotel room and took me down, met a few people, got hired by CNN to be a still photographer for them, and traveled through Yugoslavia for 2 weeks, well, at the time Serbia and Kosovo, for 2 weeks working as a still photographer for CNN, where I met Slobodan Milosevic.
Oh, my God.
Just shook his hand real quick as he was walking out of the room. We covered him in the press conference. And so there were a lot of things like that, Dave, where you just, you know, life is won by those who show up.
Yeah.
And if you don't show up, you can't play.
But, of course, if you do show up and you get shot.
Yeah, a lot of people want to live their life based on fear and make decisions based on fear. And I like to make my decisions based on love and doing things that I think is going to make me a better person.
Well, that then brings us to the question of, you've been to all these places, you deep sea dove in the Red Sea, you've gone to, you know, Sarajevo during wartime, you've been to Nepal and Thailand and Cambodia and Japan and, of course, Iraq. Where next?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I have kicked around the idea of doing a film on Iran. And
wow.
I know, it sounds totally crazy. But I'm really trying to get, you know, into the danger part of it. My next film coming out, though, is going to be about animal rescues of Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, no, that's cool.
I went down to New Orleans for 3 weeks, and I worked with the U.S. Humane Society, and I went out on animal rescues with them, and I shot a behind-the-scenes film showing what's really going on in New Orleans behind the scenes with rescuing these 50,000 stranded animals.
Well, as an animal lover and dog owner, I totally applaud that. I'm wondering, now when you do stuff, since you have a few films under your belt, do you go with a grant, or do you still sort of save your pennies and then hope to sell the thing later, or how does that all work for you?
Well, what I do, David, is I finance everything myself. I try to keep the production at bare bones. I spent a total of $5,000 producing the Iraq film, and some of the footage that you'll see in the film I sold $4,000. So I actually came out of Iraq with more money in my pocket than I did when I went in. But I basically financed the films myself. And you know, I have a film out on Cambodia, Nepal, and Thailand as well.
Right.
And then what I do is I tour the country and speak and show my films and talk to people about world travel. And in the case of Iraq, I talk to them about what the situation in Iraq and what's going on. I'm currently on a 110-city U.S. tour with my Iraq film.
Oh, my God.
I'm in the Bay Area right now, finishing up 9 shows.
Well, what's the question that people most ask of you?
How are we going to get out of the mess that we're in Iraq?
And your answer is?
My answer is, we must split Iraq up into 3 separate countries.
Huh.
I don't think that these people will ever get along with each other. They've been fighting since 640 AD, when Muhammad died. Half of them went with his brother and half of them went with his son. And that's the birth of the Shiites and the Sunnis. Split up into 3, the Kurds,
oh,
the Shiites, and the Sunnis. The Kurds have already basically split away.
Yeah.
And they're actually a very successful template for what is going right over there. And why? Because they split away. They partitioned themselves, and they are actually very pro-U.S. It's the one shining star in the whole situation in Iraq. And I feel that, you know, think about it. Yugoslavia broke up into 5 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Soviet Union broke up into 18. India broke off into Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India. If those hadn't happened, there would have been bloodbaths. But because they did happen, they avoided extensive bloodshed. And I believe that Iraq is going to go into a major civil war. And I feel the only way to avert that is to split them up into 3 separate countries, have those 3 countries get into the oil industry and manage it as a 3-nation, multi-nation oil management, and pump all those profits into those 3 countries.
Well, a little bit of profit into the U.S. I mean, you know, we're in Thailand.
Of course, absolutely. Dick Cheney wouldn't go out and shoot people if he wasn't thinking to get some profit out of it. Hi, this is filmmaker Mike Shiley, and you're listening to Days Gone By on WGBB.
Hey, quick question for you. Do you ever ask any, I know it's a typical sort of ugly American question, but I think we're entitled. Do you ever ask anyone when you were in Iraq what they thought about 9/11?
You know, I didn't. And now that you bring that up, you're the only person that's ever asked me that. And now that you bring that up, I think that I would have asked people what they think about 9/11. In general, though, I would say I was in Thailand when 9/11 hit. And I would say that from my experiences over there, people may hate our government, but they like our people.
Well, they don't know them as well as I do, but, you know. Well, that's the first laugh I got out of you, the whole conversation. I made them laugh, yay!
Oh, it's good. I love the laugh. I've got a great sense of humor. I think that people around the world have a certain sympathy for other people that get into, you know, horrific situations like that. Absolutely. And I think if they want to hate the government and like the people, it's fine. That's their choice.
Yeah, I don't know if Americans are so logical that way. I think we tend to connect the people with the government until we were shown otherwise. I mean, America as a group hated Russia as a group for decades. You know, it was all Russia. Russia was like this big old bloc represented by, you know, evil shoe-pounding leaders. And then, you know, go to Russia, and now Russia, no, there's people, they hate the government too, you know.
No, they sure do. I went to Russia, and the people there are really friendly, nice, hospitable, love Americans. And I think that people in general, and I don't want to talk about Jews and Arabs specifically, but I mean people.
Because we hate the Arabs, let's face it. No, I'm sort of kidding.
You could say that. But around the world, people in general share, you know, a certain goal. They share certain attributes. They want to have a good life. They want to raise their kids. They want to be happy. They want to, you know, have security. And I think that we share that kind of affinity with each other, whether we care to admit it or not.
If that is so true, and it is so true, why the hell have we had, like, such war and misery since B.C. So dinosaurs were fighting with each other.
Because as soon as you're bigger than the next guy, you want more. It's called greed.
Yeah. Last question for you. You mentioned risk. Good luck on the animal documentary about Katrina, but what about as far as going further afield, other places besides Iran that you would want to poke your neck into?
I am really focused on my Katrina and Iraq film right now. If I do anything, I might go to Iran. But, you know, I haven't given it a lot of thought. I think maybe I'd like to just, you know, relax for a while. I might go back to Cambodia and try to do a really nice film on Cambodia and Angkor Wat and the whole history of Cambodia. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I do want to recommend folks to go to InsideIraqTheMovie.com to find out more about that film, Inside Iraq, as well as Mike Shiley's other films, where he's been to Thailand and he's been to Cambodia, and also just to read his blog and his experiences. And as I said, I haven't finished the whole movie, but it's not for being bored or not wanting to. I just haven't had the time. It's good, and it's beautiful looking. You said you shot the thing for $5,000. Certainly does not look it. And you know, you've got a good camera, or at least voice presence, since you're mostly off camera, and you really put it together. It's like Michael Moore without the satirical dark comedy aspect. It's just there and real, and it's quite good.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I invite people to at least, you know, sign up for my newsletter and check out the website, and if they want to know what's more, a little bit more about what's happening in Iraq, take up the film. And I promise they won't hate it.
You know, I can pretty much promise that to it. It really is good stuff, and it's been good stuff talking with Mike Shiley on Days Gone By. Thanks for coming all the way from other parts of the world to be in the neighborhood.